Hey folks, we are at Ride Out right now. We are watching all the riders leave, thousands and thousands of people. I'm here with Lauren. Lauren, what are you seeing? What are you seeing? She's blowing her noisemaker, raised millions of dollars. It's around 7:30 a.m. on day one. Just watching rider after rider, thousands of them. Pretty darn amazing. Way to go, riders!
That clip that you just all heard was recorded at the Ride Out of AIDS Life Cycle 2013, from which I recently returned, and we're going to talk all about on this week's episode. But first, to be clear, you are listening to This Show Is So Gay, and I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send that email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. Follow us on Twitter, and of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. So we took the last couple of weeks off as I served as a roadie for AIDS Life Cycle 2013, and we're spending a chunk of this week's episode bringing some of that incredible event back to you. As I mentioned to you a few weeks ago, I worked the gear and tent crew on Gear Truck F. About halfway through the ride, I had the opportunity to spend some time with one of the riders stowing her gear on my truck, and I knew that I wanted her on this week's show to talk about the event. She is an actress, she is a yogini, she is a West African drummer, a part-time badass, it's on there on her website, a full-time fruitcake, and just an all-out inspiration. Tracy Dinwiddie, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much, Ken. Thank you.
What a treat to have you. We have to get some stuff out of the way right away. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You were on Supernatural, and I went all fangirl on you on the event. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
I channeled my inner tween, and that was a moment for me.
That was sweet. here we were in a sea of luggage, and I was about to schlep my 50-plus-pound bag across the size of two football fields, and you wanted a star photo op. I loved it.
Loved it. That went right up on Facebook. Well, we have so much to cover. For folks, you know, I talk about AIDS Life Cycle every year, and I think that, you know, short of actually participating, sometimes it's a little difficult to explain to folks what it's like. How do you explain to folks what AIDS Life Cycle is like?
It has shifted. It's much like a kaleidoscope of an experience. From the get-go, I would say, oh, well, it's this really neat 545-mile ride from San Francisco to Los Angeles, and during the training time, we raise money to help bring awareness to those living with HIV/AIDS and also provide medical care for those in San Francisco as well as Los Angeles or anyone who shows up at either of these facilities. But now, having done this ride and having trained and having had made so many friends and new friends who are living with HIV/AIDS, this is like a life-changing and one of the most difficult and rewarding experiences of my life.
Was this your first one?
Yes.
It was your first one. So talk to us about the decision to get involved.
Well, it seemed like all things pointed to take on the ride this past year. The seed was planted many years ago with a spiritual mentor of mine who had sung its praises many times, and I have many friends who are living with HIV and have lost friends to AIDS, and I've witnessed one of my very besties have to struggle and reform his own life after losing his partner to AIDS. So I've seen the gamut. What spurred it was that my partner took a position at AIDS Life Cycle in the LA office, and I really wanted to support her in her first year at the office. I wanted to honor my friend Hank, who had passed away and lived his last beautiful year of life with AIDS. And I wanted to honor my brothers and sisters that I share sobriety with, who are huge, huge mentors and examples of people living with adversity in a beautiful way. So there's There's a lot of elements. There's so many. I wanted to honor Freddie Mercury. I mean, he's just like one of my all-time fave, badass, gay, mofo man that just rocks my socks off. And so, there's, you know, like I could just go on and on and on. And having done the ride, the moments while I'm, you know, on my bike or at a rest stop and someone takes the time to introduce themselves to me, and I guess having been one of the top fundraisers, I brought some attention to myself, but what was really precious was being thanked by someone and someone saying, listen, I'm HIV positive. I don't mention that to a whole lot of people, but I go to the center, I get help there, and you helped me.
Wow.
And that really made me see things so differently. It's very easy to say, oh yeah, well I'm, you know, I love the training and I love to help people out, but when you're holding someone's hand and they're looking into your eyes and they're saying you directly helped me get the care I need, is just a gift beyond what I could express to you in words. I wish I could, but
yeah.
I'm trying.
You're doing well. And there are two elements, and every time we talk about the ride, we always talk about the two elements. You know, there is the personal and there's the community, and we're going to get to the community piece. But sometimes, and you use that phrase that I hear some people use, and I'm going to take issue with it, when you say, you know, now having done the ride, let's be clear, you pedaled more than 540 miles, which I think sometimes saying having done the ride doesn't appropriately capture. On a
right.
personal level, holy cow, Tracy.
I know. Holy quadriceps.
How'd you do?
I rode every single mile,
nice.
Ken. I rode 546.2 miles.
Of course you did.
I was the third one. I was the third to last out of camp that morning. A wreck, an emotional wreck, and I booked it as fast as I could. I was in a rush. I was so terrified that the caboose would scoop me up and wreck my, you know, my attempt to ride every single mile. So much so that I ended up riding more because I got scared and I kept going down a street that wasn't the street I was supposed to be riding down.
That's amazing. So you feel, you felt good. You are one of those people who actually trained, right?
I did.
Oh, good.
I trained. I started training in the fall. I learned how to clip in and out of my bicycle pedals sometime in September, October, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really did take this from the ground up. I learned how to ride
nice.
Through the training rides that are provided via AIDS Life Cycle and Synergy Cycles and Shifting Gears and all the many positive peddlers. There's so many training rides that I would whore myself around and learn how to ride my bicycle with these people, and they truly taught me how to do it.
Love it. Love it. So that's the personal level. You conquered it. As you mentioned, Tracy, you were one of the top fundraisers for the whole event. And I haven't even said this yet. AIDS Life Cycle 2013 raised $14.2 million, which is just staggering.
I know, right?
And you played a large role. Were you number two? You were the number two fundraiser on the event. And I'm going to let you tell people, how much did you raise for this event?
It looks like, as of today, just over $104,000.
Wow. How?
I know. That is the question. There are so many ways. I did, my predominant, I guess, vehicle was social media.
Yeah.
I started this whole thing and shared every bit of my journey along the way with my fans, with my friends, with acquaintances. They shared it with their friends, and the enthusiasm was infectious. It caught on. People really dug the journey, and
yeah.
they wanted to be a part of. And sure enough, we I have to say we met the goal of 100,000, which was quite a long shot in my book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was it? I remember you saying, and by the way, for when I type this up for the description, I'm going to say 105,000 because isn't it easier to change one of your shirts if we say 105,000?
I know. That's what I wanted at least to hit 105,000 because my 5,000K t-shirt that I received as a gift incentive for reaching that goal, I thought, well, maybe I could put 100,005K. Yeah, 105K. Yeah, on my 5K kit.
Know that I'm typing it up that way. So if my typing it up that way makes it so, go with it. Go with
it. Right on. Well, we're at 104,295, and some matching gifts haven't come through yet. So honestly, I think we're there.
We're there,
and then some, which is amazing. Absolutely amazing. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh, it's really incredible. So one of the things about the ride, and this is one of the drawbacks to the ride, is leaving the ride and going back to our quote unquote real world. We've both been back in the real world for it's almost, is it going on? Yeah, it's about a week and a half. It's going on 2 weeks. What do you do?
Girl, I'm so depressed. I'm not even kidding. I'm laughing, and I think I'm laughing only because I'm connecting with a fellow ALC.
Oh, yeah.
But
what do you do with all of it?
I have cried. I cried every day on the ride. Then I cried when I got home. Then I unpacked and I cried some more. I mean, today is the first day I'm going to be getting back on my bike. And what do I do with that? I think I just had to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I had to allow myself to rest, which is not an easy thing for me to do. But I did abstain from exercising the past week and a half. And I got body work, and my acupuncturist strictly forbade me to go back on the trapeze or ride a bike or do any heavy downhills until 2 weeks would pass. So Thursday marks that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you'll get back on the bike. Are you registered for next year?
I am.
Look at me, too.
I know, right? I am. Although I would like to do things differently. Having my first ride under my belt, I definitely want to, what I want to do, Ken, is I want to help first-time riders prepare for the logistics added to the strenuous ride itself, because I don't think I knew intellectually, but I did not know what it would feel like to ride 100 miles or so, give or take.
Yeah.
And find a gear truck.
Right.
Find my gear and schlep it across fields, dirt fields.
Oh,
and then unpack and pitch a tent and then find a shower, find food, connect with my partner, connect with my friends, know what's going on under the big tent for the evening, get some body work, like all of that. I think there's a checklist that needs to be made and given to these kids, and I mean kids of all ages, that are showing up for the first time going, what in the world? How do I do this?
All these tents look the same.
They do. Like just little tips, like how to make your tent identifiable, to literally making a checklist and having a check-in buddy that you know, someone familiar that you know, so that you can help each other. One afternoon when I got back, someone had pitched my tent for me. They knew that I was having a rough day, and they pitched my tent for me.
Yeah.
I can't tell you. Like, I went to the gear truck, and I'm like, my stuff is gone. I
remember.
And I went, and it wasn't my tent mate. It was because my tent mate princessed. So someone, Jason, had gone and grabbed my stuff and pitched it and put my bag inside my tent for me so that I could have one step, taken care of upon return to the camp. And I want to do that for someone else.
Isn't that great? Isn't that great? On your checklist, on behalf of the gear and tent crew, any chance you can tell people to pack a little lighter?
Yes, absolutely. We don't need half the shibbits.
Oh my gosh. I have to say, we laugh it off. But on the inside, not so much with some of those. We call them Weekend at Bernie's bags. It's really, so yes, maybe just pack later.
Yes.
And I will say kudos to that one woman, and I never got her name, who I perhaps made some sort of snarky remark about how heavy her bag was. And she turned to me and said, yeah, I have a lot of emotional baggage. And there was nothing I could say after that. So that was well done. It was well done. Well, Tracy, we have a national listening audience. There are folks who hear us talk about this ride every year. Sway them to participate.
I'm doing it again, although it was it has its own challenges, but I promise you the rewards outweigh it. This is the most amazing, colorful, diverse community. It's an experience that will leave you with more friends, more muscle in your thighs, stories to tell, views that are breathtaking and breath-giving, and a handful of thank yous from people you're directly helping. There's miracles at every corner.
Yeah.
Just when your energy is low and you need a pick-me-up, I promise you, it is like it's a miracle worker and a friend maker, AIDS Life Cycle. It will provide you exactly what you need, a hug, a laugh, a beatbox sister that's at the top of a hill, at the bottom of a hill, someone to hug you and hold you or laugh with you or change your tire with you. It's a beautiful metaphor for a yoga practice or for life. Life itself, just everything you need will be provided just when you need it.
Perfect.
So come and join us, and you will be a part of something so extraordinary and so rewarding.
Perfect. Perfect. Hey, you do have a life outside of the ride the other 51 weeks a year. Anything you want to hype? Where should folks go to follow all the cool things that you are doing?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes, I have a Facebook fan page. I think the best way to find me is just to go to TracyDinwiddie.com, and you can click on, you know, my @GrooveGoddess Twitter feed and check out some of the stuff there, or come on to the fan page. We call it T-ville, or some of the gals and guys call themselves T-bugs. It's just an affectionate term for friendly fans who want to find out what's going on.
Love it.
Yeah, lots of fun things in the works for this year.
Now, I see on IMDb that, because I'm only through the fourth season of Supernatural, I see that you're coming up on an episode, so I'm not done with you yet.
Ah, no.
Okay.
Yeah, I do return.
Okay.
I won't say how or when.
I'm so excited. Well, let me tell you this. I said it in the intro. As soon as I met you, I just knew I wanted to have you on the show. I can't really put it into words, which doesn't make for good radio, but you have this spark about you that is just so inspirational and so palpable. And yes, you raised a ton of money, and that's like just awe-inspiring in itself, but there is just a presence to you that I mean, yes, am I a little obsessed with you in a scary way? Sure, fine, we'll say that. But I have to tell you, you are one of those folks that as soon as folks meet you, it's just, you are truly an inspiration.
That warms my heart. Thanks, Ken. And you were such a joy for me. Thank you for helping me find my luggage every day.
And I will do it again for you next year.
I look forward to
there
it
you go.
With glee, with gusto, and I'll be there.
Tracy Dinwiddie, an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Ken. Blessings to you and yours.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we are going to cover more from AIDS Life Cycle 2013, and we are pleased to welcome to the show Chris Brown. Chris Brown is the Director of Health and Mental Health Services at the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center. He has more than 28 years of experience working in public health at both the state and local levels of government and in the nonprofit arena. Before joining the LA Gay and Lesbian Center, he served as the Assistant Commissioner of the STI HIV Division with the Chicago Department Department of Public Health for more than 10 years. Before that, he worked with the Arizona Department of Health Services for 7 years as the chief of the Office of HIV, STD, Hepatitis C Services. He's served on various government commissions, boards, and directors, local and national AIDS service organizations. He's received numerous awards for his advocacy and services to the HIV and AIDS community. And now he is here with us, Chris Brown, rider number 3093. Welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you, Ken, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Thank you for doing all this. We have a ton of ground to cover, as I told you. Are you ready, sir?
Yes, I am.
And before we even talk about where the money goes and all that, I want to be very clear. You are rider number 3093.
Yes, this was my first ride.
Was it your first one?
Yeah, my first time rider. And I did go to some of the ceremonies last year. I went to the opening ceremonies. I went to the night in Ventura and the closing ceremonies at the VA in Los Angeles. But this was the first time I rode, and I rode all 545 miles.
Well, we love having you guys. It gives us something to do. So we have a ton of ground to cover. First, we just got to get this out of the way. Chris, what does the Director of Health and Mental Health Services at the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center do?
So I oversee, you know, as in the title, all the health and the mental health services. So that includes all medical services related to HIV. We also provide primary care services to individuals who aren't HIV infected. We also have a large transgender health program, and we're building and have services for lesbian health.
Nice.
So all health-related, medical-related services we provide. We have about 2,600 people living with HIV and an additional about 1,000 individuals, either transgender individuals or other individuals that do not have HIV. So we've got a pretty robust health and medical care services that we provide. We also provide comprehensive mental health services to individuals. We provide HIV prevention activities and services to people that are uninfected and also to people that are infected so that they don't spread HIV to others. We provide numerous HIV tests every year to people to find out if they're infected, and we have an on-site pharmacy where we provide medications to people living with HIV and to people that do not live with HIV.
Nice. Now, it is my impression, and tell me if I'm wrong, that the $14.2 million raised on this year's AIDS Life Cycle helps out the work that you do.
Oh, incredibly. We couldn't do the work we do without the funding from AIDS Life Cycle, and that's the bottom line. But before I get into that, I want to mention we have a robust research program where most of the research that we do is related to HIV. And right now we have 11 trials going on. So research is an important part of our work. But the funds raised from AIDS Life Cycle really help everybody living with HIV. You know, we do have some people coming in that have full insurance and they have coverage, but most of the people that we provide services to are either completely uninsured or underinsured. And without the funding from AIDS Life Cycle, we could not provide the comprehensive services to those individuals.
Nice. And I do want to talk about the research piece because I think that's the hook that I use. So, you know, I'm here in Vermont. I come out there and I do AIDS Life Cycle, but it is a little bit of a challenge for me to do the fundraising piece just because folks here on the East Coast don't understand why I'm raising money for services on the West Coast, but the money also supports research.
Absolutely. So I should say that we do get a lot of grants, and
yeah,
the grants we get provide services to people living with HIV, and they provide the research that we conduct to really prevent the spread of HIV or find tools to make life better for those living with HIV. But the challenge we have with the grants is none of them cover the full costs. So without the funding from the AIDS Life Cycle, we really could not have the level of services that we have. So again, we have about 11 research projects going. Some of them are very specific to drugs for HIV, but two that I want to mention, we have a PrEP, a pre-exposure prophylaxis study going on right now that's also coupled with a linkage to care study. So we're really testing out on the ground how pre-exposure prophylaxis works with individuals that are at higher risk for HIV. And we're also looking very closely at linkage to care services. So when an individual is living with HIV, one of the most important factors is to get them linked to care and get them retained in care So we have a research grant that looks exactly sort of how that works and how that works on the ground for people living with HIV. Both huge, important aspects of research.
Now, you are one of those professionals who has the unique experience, which not everybody does, of having access to both the client side and the research side. So you're seeing two different sides of it. And I know this is perhaps the most basic way I could ask this with a terribly complex issue, but having seen those both sides, how are we doing these days? You know, we're at 32 years of HIV and AIDS. What emotions do you attach to how we are addressing the disease?
You know, I'm more optimistic than ever.
Great.
Now, and that said, we have a lot of challenges in front of us. So let me describe some of those challenges. We estimate, or the CDC estimates, that there are approximately 18% of the people living with HIV do not know they're infected. This represents an enormous challenge for us.
Yeah.
So many of the programs we have here at the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center are programs to reach out to these individuals who are infected and don't know it. So we do this through a number of different mechanisms. We have outreach events. We use social media. We use condom distribution programs. There are many ways we try to reach out to individuals who are infected and don't know it. And I should say here in Los Angeles, many of those individuals are gay, bisexual, and men who have sex with men, and many of them are younger and men of color. So much of our outreach programs and our prevention programs are targeted to these individuals. Then some of the challenges that we have, once an individual finds out that they're living with HIV, we have to link them into care, keep them in care, retain them in care, which is an incredibly important aspect. We need to get people on medications and have them stay on medications to where they're virally suppressed. So they've got HIV, but the medications can suppress the level of virus in the blood and in the circulatory fluids to the point where the chances of them spreading it to someone else are significantly reduced. So those are our challenges. And, you know, it's easy to say, oh, you know, you get somebody, you find out they're living with HIV, and having them see the doctor every time and take their pills exactly as they need to sounds easy, but there are a lot of challenges that individuals have to overcome to do that. And one of our great efforts is to help people overcome those challenges so that they can live a long, productive, and healthy life with HIV.
But you're feeling optimistic.
I'm feeling very optimistic. I mean, we've got the tools now to do this. Now what we need are the appropriate resources to back up those tools.
Right.
And we are seeing an investment in these tools. Like, we're receiving funding from local governments and federal governments to really pay attention to individuals living with HIV, to have them stay in care, help them stay on their medications so that they are virally suppressed.
And AIDS life cycle plays a large part in that. I have to ask you, so, you know, you are acutely aware of how the money raised from AIDS life cycle helps out the services that you all provide. Why make the decision to be a rider this past year? Why decide I'm going to be rider 3093?
Good question. So, you know, I started the center a little over a year ago, and last year I had only been on board for a couple of months when AIDS life cycle happened in 2012. So I was incredibly impressed with the entire event. I mean, it's a moving city down the coast of California for 7 days. Unless you've seen it, it's hard to describe. And I was so incredibly impressed. I thought, you know, I've got to do something next year. And I debated for a long time whether I wanted to be a rider or whether I wanted to be a roadie. And I just decided, you know, about halfway through the year, I was going to do the rider. I was going to be a rider. So you're right, I'm 3093. And I bought my bike a little after the first of the year.
Nice.
And started training. and that certainly wasn't easy, but I really got into it. And I just felt it was what I needed to do. And I have to tell you, being a rider is a life-changing experience.
Yeah.
I felt like it stretched me, you know, mentally, physically, and emotionally. And it's something I'll never forget. And when I crossed the finish line in here in Los Angeles at the VA complex, I was flooded with emotions.
Nice.
And it's something I'm happy I did, I'm proud I did, and it's something I'll never forget.
I'm not going to hold the gear truck H thing against you. They're a good bunch of guys. That's Adrian and Charles and Rolando. I know my boys. It's fine. Gear truck F was where it was all going down, but that's fine. H is fine. Now, do you ever walk down the halls of the LA Gay and Lesbian Center and see Lori Jean and just instantly perk up?
Oh, all the time.
Because I would imagine that's what happens.
She's an amazing individual, and she's a great leader. And she knows the staff. She knows our clients. And, you know, she's an inspiration for us. And I'm just thrilled to be working here while she's leading the organization.
And if I can ask a basic question, why, you know, because we really have the great opportunity here on this show to talk to folks who are working in just the most incredible areas of LGBT rights and equality. And we're always curious why this field for them. Why for you have you, as I said in the intro, 28 years of experience working in public health? Why this decision for you?
So it was a very personal decision, and I should tell you, in the early 80s, 1983, I basically answered an ad in the newspaper looking for a communicable disease investigator in public health, and it was looking for people with a background in biology and psychology, which I had bachelor's degrees in both. So without any real, you know, personal commitment, I applied for the job and got it. And I was working in a sexually transmitted disease program, you know, trying to control syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia. And I found it interesting, but not real compelling. And I thought, you know, this is a great learning experience and a stepping stone, but I couldn't see myself working here much longer. And then the AIDS epidemic hit. Mm-hmm. And I also found out in 1983 that I was living with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And the light bulb went off for me like I've never had in my entire life, and I realized I was exactly where I needed to be.
Wow.
And I have spent the rest of the time devoting my really personal and professional life to ending this epidemic. And it's been my calling. It's been the passion of my adult life, and I know I made the right decision 30 years ago.
I have to say that's one of the pieces of AIDS life cycle. You know, there's so many pieces of AIDS life cycle that you just can't really recreate outside of that week. And one of the pieces for me that I don't really have the opportunity to be fully engaged is with the positive community, and the sense of the positive community on the ride is just, holy crud, it's so inspiring.
Yeah, it really is. The positive peddlers,
yeah.
You know, all of the people that are coming out and proud with their status, it is real. It's so inspiring. And the camaraderie, I mean, with the HIV positive and the people who don't have HIV is unbelievable. And just, you know, we're all going through the same thing every day. We're all riding for the same cause. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you have a national audience here listening to the show, and I do get a little bit of flack as I talk about AIDS life cycle every single year when it comes around. And I do get, you know, every now and then an email from a listener saying, this is a California thing, not HIV and AIDS, but, you know, the ride is a California thing, and I don't know why you're covering it so nationally. Speak to our listening audience on why AIDS life cycle and the work that you're doing really is a national issue.
Well, I mean, we have riders coming in from all over the country and from other countries. So we have participants, you know, that come from all over, and we benefit from their participation, I want to say, first and foremost. It's just amazing to see the riders from New York or Florida and coming here to California to sort of join in the full experience. But I will say that, you know, San Francisco AIDS Foundation and the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center have a significant role nationally and internationally. We have policy individuals that work hand in hand with people in Washington, D.C. all the time to help influence national policies that affect every person living with HIV in the United States. We're constantly working to renew and continue the Ryan White Act.
Yes.
We're looking, which is a big issue for people living with HIV. You know, we've got the Affordable Care Act that's going to be kicking in at the beginning of next year, which is going to provide amazing services to people living with HIV, but not the full spectrum services that many people need. And the Ryan White Act will absolutely complement the Affordable Care Act to provide the services people need and to really bring an end to this epidemic. So both organizations work constantly on the national level to make sure that what legislation is passed or policies are passed work for people living with HIV. And we also have an international focus. We're constantly working with people from around the world, particularly China, to make sure that LGBT life there is good for every LGBT person and that we help build the HIV platforms in those countries.
Nice. Nice. Now the big question. Are you registered for AIDS Lifecycle 2014?
So, not yet.
Oh, wait a second. Okay. Yeah, wait, we got to let me pause. Take a deep breath. Okay.
We are in the midst, all the riders and roadies here, we're going to be going out to lunch next week,
uh-huh.
and kind of recapping everything. But I have to tell you, I haven't registered, but I'm already thinking of my new red dress.
Okay.
So I'm definitely heading in that direction. Yes.
Huh. All right. I have a call to Lori Jean after this, so we will, I suspect your registration will be done by the end of the day. I'm just putting that out there. Any fundraising tips? How'd you do fundraising?
You know, I don't have a lot of background in personal fundraising. I mean, I've worked with, you know, grant raising and grant seeking for many years and grant making.
Nice.
But I haven't actually done a lot of personal fundraising. And I have to tell you, the tips and the structure that you get from AIDS Lifecycle are amazing, and I was absolutely overwhelmed at the response I got from friends and family. And when I kind of put my story out there, you know, I've been living with HIV for 30 years. This is my new way and for me to give back, and I've done it my whole life, but I've never done it this way before. And I was really overwhelmed at the response, so I met my goal and was thrilled.
All right. Still on the part where you haven't registered for next year yet, but we'll take care of that. I registered. I'm all set. I set kind of an ambitious fundraising goal, and I'm a little bit nervous about that, but I'm also very stubborn, so I got to stick to it.
Very good. So, and are you riding next year?
I'm not. I swear I really want to. It's so difficult. It's so difficult to train for it, because it's so early in the season, and it's just too cold here in the East Coast. And I do recognize the merit that perhaps people should train.
Yeah. No, training's challenging, but I just want to say, the role of the roadie is incredible, and this whole event couldn't take place without the volunteers and without the roadies. So, you know, that's an absolutely great role to play.
It's a partnership. Chris Brown, again, rider number 3093. What an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Please keep doing what you're doing. And we should say, if folks want to learn more about all the great things that everybody over there that you work with, what they're doing there, where should they go?
So they should go to our website, lagaycenter.org, and they can learn about, they can go to the AIDS Lifecycle website learn a lot about the AIDS Lifecycle. I would say if you've got an opportunity to participate in this event, do it. It will be a life-changing experience.
It's a life-changer. It's a life-changer. I said after my first year doing it, 3 or 4 years ago, I said, I'm definitely going to do this next year. And then after my second time doing it, I said, this is a lifetime commitment.
Absolutely. And the website is AIDSLifecycle.org.
Perfect. Chris Brown, you and I'm sure your amazing staff there, because you're not doing this by yourself.
Oh, not at all. And you're right. It's an amazing staff, an incredibly dedicated staff, too.
Oh, Chris, all the best to you and your staff. Please, sir, keep doing what you're doing.
Okay. Thank you, Ken.
All right, folks, and we are back. Another amazing guest in this jam-packed show. We've been gone for a couple weeks. We got to jam them all the guests in a great show for this week. Singer-songwriter Samia is all set to release her first EP with her incredible New York City band in just a few weeks. That EP will include the bonus track, We Have the Right, which is just an amazing track that will totally get you ready or carry you through Pride season, no matter where you are in that process. And the uber-inspiring video that goes along with We Have the Right is on YouTube. You can go watch it. I watched it several times already today. She is here with us right this second. Samia, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, thank you so much. What a lovely introduction.
Exciting times for you right now, my friend.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Thank you.
There's a lot going on. All right, well, we have a ton to talk about, but we must start with you as we start with all of our singer-songwriters. Tell our listening audience why music, why the medium of music to express yourself?
Oh, you know, my answer is kind of boring. I mean, I've never, ever considered doing anything else. You know, I was basically singing from the womb, you know, started performing publicly at the age of 4 or 5. Never looked back. There was never another option. There was never a backup plan. Heaven knows I need a backup plan. but now it's just always been part of who I am on a very deep level. And, it's all I really know how to do well.
Quite the background, by the way, that you are not one of these folks. Yeah, I just grew up in the East Village. You've been all over the place.
Yeah, my family's interesting. My dad was in the Air Force for about 30 years. So, you know, I was born when he was stationed in Germany. We were in a few different spots in the States for a while, but I mostly grew up in Korea on a military base right in the middle of Seoul. And, you know, it sounds very exotic and glamorous, but I assure you it's much more mundane when you were living it.
I'm going with exotic and glamorous, and I'm not letting you shatter that.
You know, I welcome you to that. Thank you.
Well, we've had a ton of singer-songwriters on lately, and we've been asking them the same question, and I love that I get to ask you this as well. We were talking with Kristen from Antigone Rising a few weeks ago, and she puts out there, as do some artists, but not all artists, that they are out artists, that they are openly queer artists, and you are one of those artists who puts that out there about herself. Why is that important at this point for you to put out there?
For me, as an artist and as a person just in my life, I've always had a real problem with inauthenticity. Is that
mm-hmm.
a word?
Oh, well, make it one, yeah.
I've never been able to be anything but what I actually am. It's very difficult for me to hide my feelings, to hide aspects of my personality, to hide my beliefs. I can't really do it. things always tend to leak out with me. I'm an open book. So as far as being, you know, openly queer, I have been since I was a very young teenager,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know another way to be. It's kind of the same answer I gave you about why music. It's just who I am, and I have to be that way. I also think it's really important, you know, it's always been important for people who have public personas, I think, to be as genuine as possible, to show everybody who's watching them that it's okay to be who you are. You know, because look, if this like amazing musician can do it, or this amazing author, or this amazing, you know, personality on TV can be openly gay or bisexual or trans or anything that's considered different or alternative in our society, that gives inspiration and gives permission to everybody else who might relate to those people to do the same thing. And I think that makes the world a better place.
I was looking up, you know, doing my little research. You have some rabid gay fans. I love it.
That's so nice to hear. Thank you. It's a, you know, the community is very important to me. We've struggled so much, you know, as a minority in our country that still suffers from discrimination. So thank you. Yeah, I support the LGBTQ community with all my heart and soul, and I just, you know, I'm doing everything I can to try to contribute to the cause of making things better for all of us.
Nice. Nice. Well, we're going to be playing a couple tracks, and we will certainly be playing We Have the Right, which we're going to talk about in just a few. But for folks who have not heard your music, and it's not going to last too long because we're playing it, how would you describe your sound to folks?
I mean, if you want to be really general about it, it all falls into the realm of pop rock.
Yeah.
Different songs on the EP, which I consider kind of a sampler platter of what I'm capable of writing and performing. You know, they give nods to different genres. There's a song on there that gives a nod to soul. There's a song that gives a nod to classic rock. That's our debut single, Lose Me. We Have the Right is like just a big, powerful pop rock anthem. You know, the one thing that characterizes all of my performances is that I try to be as real as possible.
Nice.
You know, I try to let the emotions shine through. All of the songs are about real things that have happened in my life. You know, everything's as honest as I can make it, because I think that's really important in art.
And my favorite question is the family okay with you rocking out?
You know, my parents have been really supportive of me having a career in music. They've never really been very comfortable with my sexuality,
mm-hmm.
and they've been calling it a phase since I first came out at the age of 14. I'm 29 now,
nice.
So that's a pretty long phase. But you know, they're both coming out to the city for my EP release show next month, and I don't know what they're making of all of all of the press about the marriage equality song right now,
right,
because I'm not sure what their stance is on it. But, you know, as far as parents go, they're supportive, they're loving, and whether or not they agree with my views on things, at least there's that. So.
Right. Just for the record, I'm hoping that the phase does not end during this interview, because there would be a certain irony if the gay phase ended during your interview on this show is so gay.
The show is so gay that it made me not gay anymore.
Yes. No. it would be a resume builder for me, but I don't think it would be good.
I have a pretty strong feeling that this phase is probably never going to end.
Cheers. All right, good.
Kind of thing.
I'm just asking for the next 8 or 9 minutes. That's all I want to back up.
Got it, friend.
Now, our buddy John Becker, who has been on the show before, he posted about We Have the right there on the Bellerico Project. Very exciting press that you're getting around this.
It's really cool. I mean, I think that, you know, people just want as many ways as possible to spread the message, to inspire others. We tried to make the video something that would be inspiring by focusing on, you know, real-life couples and the many different faces of support for marriage equality. That was one of my big things with it, was just, you know, trying to show, like, it's not just a problem for gay people, it's a problem for all people,
yeah,
that marriage inequality isn't a reality yet. You know, and I'm hoping that the Supreme Court comes out with that decision this week, that, you know, to strike down DOMA and Prop 8. But yeah, you know, it's so wonderful that we're getting this press. John Becker is an amazing activist and writer and journalist, and I am such a fan of his work. You know, I can't thank him and the others who've shared the video enough for helping us spread our contribution to the cause. So it's been really wonderful.
And we should back up a step. Why write a song like this? You know, some listeners are like, oh, I just want my singer-songwriters to do their brokenhearted songs. And you have, as you said on your EP, you have your smorgasbord coming out. But in there is this song that has this very specific message. Backing up a step, why go this route?
I didn't plan it. I was riding the subway one day in March, or, you know, late March, around the time Edith Windsor was taking her case to the Supreme Court, and it was really heavily on my mind, and the chorus of We Have the Right just kind of popped into my head fully formed. Like, it was like, it wasn't there one second, and the next second I had a chorus, and I didn't know where it came from. It took a couple of months for me to, I wanted to get it ready in time for Pride, but it seemed like such a huge task, because it, you know, it's expensive to record a song. Making a music video wasn't even in my mind. The reason it all happened was because when I finally made the decision to just record the song, people started coming out of the woodwork to help make it happen. And our amazing director producer Kasky Hunsader of Upstairs Landing Productions, you know, out of nowhere was like, let's just make a music video. Like, let's really get this out there. This is an amazing message, amazing song. I want to direct and produce it. Let's make it happen, you know. And so when he jumped on board, everything turned into this crazy freight train. We got the song and the video done in a week and a half.
Oh, awesome.
It was finished last Friday, and now it's already out there, and, you know, and people are talking about it. So it's been an insane schedule. As far as why, like I said, I had the song in my head, it just had to, I had to get it out there. Why wouldn't you?
Right.
Why wouldn't you put out a song with a message that's important to you? Combining your passion for, you know, what you want to do in life, which for me is music, and your beliefs that you hold so deeply, you know, including equality, combining those two, doing them at the same time, it's like the best thing ever.
Yeah, but although I really do want to pause here and say that not every artist would do that. And I think exactly as you said, why would you not do that, except that there are those folks who can be activists in certain ways, but certainly would say, all right, but my songwriting is separate. So my admiration for you actually doing that, I don't want you to move too quickly past the fact that you actually did that, because there are a ton of artists who don't.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say. And I'm, you know, not knocking anybody. Like, everyone approaches their music and their art differently. This is just the way I do it. You know,
I
have to, I'm outspoken. I always have been. I have to put my beliefs on, you know, on the wall for the world to see. So
love it. Love it. Well, it is Pride season. What do you got coming up?
So we found out this really exciting thing. we actually had a couple of people as extras in the music video who work at Citibank, which is a sponsor of the Gay Pride Parade in New York this year, and they have a float in the parade. And these two wonderful gentlemen were, you know, so into the song that they convinced the Citibank people to play it on loop during the parade, and I'm going to be on the float. It's so exciting. This is going to be, like, the best Pride ever. I just couldn't be more grateful, and the showing of support has been insane, and I'm so happy. So, you know, I'm going to be out there partying with everybody. I'll be at the parade, obviously, and it's going to be a great time, and I want to meet as many people as possible.
It's so funny, because I am so far from a fashionista and honestly don't care much about that at all, but my first thought is, oh, my gosh, what's she going to wear? What are you going to wear?
What am I going to wear? I don't even know. I'm going to have to go shopping. It's going to be insane.
That's good. Well, that's it. That's could, you know, that's a career defining outfit right there. No pressure.
I'll probably end up wearing the same thing I've worn for one of my shows or what I wore in the music video.
So you're going to be on a float. Gigs coming up?
Yes, we have a music video release gig coming up next Tuesday, June 25th in New York City at Industry Bar.
I love Industry Bar. That's
have you been?
Of course I've been. Yeah.
I love Industry Bar too. It's a great place, and the people who run that place are wonderful. So they've allowed me to come, and I'm going to sing three tracks off the EP, followed by We Have the Right, with the music video playing on every screen in the club. So that's going to be really fun. Tuesday, June 25th, 11 p.m. at Industry Bar in New York City. They can be found online at industry-bar.com.
Talk to me about what kind of responses you've been getting to this song.
I mean, for the most part, it's been, overwhelmingly positive. A lot of, one thing that I'm loving is that people are now starting to leave comments saying how long they've been with their partners, which is mirroring what happened in the video with the people holding up signs. And that's been really, really heartwarming for me. It's just the people saying, like, thank you for this. You know, we've been together this many years. We've been married this many years. That's huge. So it's been a great response so far, and I'm looking forward to getting the video out to more and more people. And, yeah, and continuing what's been going on the last few days.
My favorite comment is right there at the top where the one guy says, with your blessings, I'd like to share this on Facebook. And I love your response. Yeah, please do. As if you were going to say, no, this is a secret.
That's a sweet comment. I know, it's adorable. I like the one from the Reverend who's been, I'd have to go back to my computer and look at it, but can you see the one I'm talking about?
Yes, Reverend Timmy.
That's it. I really appreciate that. You know, it really makes me very happy when people within the religious establishment express their support for marriage equality, just because that, you know, religion has such a bad rap.
Right.
when it comes to LGBT rights, you know, there's a lot of people out there who use religion as the reason why there shouldn't be equal rights. And every time somebody stands up and says, no, I'm Christian or I'm Jewish or I'm anything and I support it because God is love, that brings the message home, you know, that that's what it should be about. It shouldn't be about judgment and punishment. It should be about love. Love is love, and that really makes me happy when that happens.
Oh, well, heck, nothing says Pride season like that. You have all these things coming up. Where can folks go to follow all of your adventures?
SamiaMusic.com is my website. If you just want to see the music video for We Have the Right and don't want to have to search on YouTube, you can find that at MarriageEqualityAnthem.com, and both of those sites link to each other, so it's pretty easy to find me from either of them.
Such exciting times for you. Such exciting times. And again, I really, my admiration and appreciation for you taking the time. I love that it just came to you on the subway, but that you penned it, that you orchestrated it, that you, you know, put it all together, recorded it, did a video for it. There was so much follow through here, and I'm sure any number of opportunities to say, okay, this is quite an involved project, and you really persisted and put it out there, and it's so apparent, even in the couple days that it's been on YouTube, just what kind of a response it's getting. And so looking forward to the EP, but truly, just on behalf of the whole community, LGBT and ally community, thank you for putting this out there.
Oh, thank you. I can't take all the credit. The people I worked with are the real heroes. I couldn't have done it without without Kasky, without my manager, without my producer, my musicians, like everybody came forward and helped make this happen. So I have to share the credit because it was a true collaborative effort.
Happy to share. And the one of the pieces that I love about the video, it's like a little mini LGBT history lesson.
Yeah, it was important to me because I feel like this is such a historical moment in the gay rights movement. I wanted to pay homage to everything that came before, and I chose to start with the Stonewall riots because that was basically the beginning of the modern gay rights movement. Before that, everybody was kind of operating under euphemisms and trying to be as conservative as possible in order to not rock the boat. And then Stonewall happened, and suddenly, it was okay for people to be loud and proud and queer and as outrageous as they wanted to be. And that's when the real movement started. That's when people really started to come forward and speak out. It just feels like, now with the Supreme Court case and Edith Windsor and everything that's happening today, it's the culmination of all of the work of the people who, starting with Stonewall in the past 50 years, have pushed this cause forward, and made so many sacrifices and fought so many hard battles. It just didn't feel right to have a song about marriage equality, from my perspective, without paying respect to everything that's happened to get us here.
Yeah.
And I wanted to show that things have gotten better. A lot of people, there's a lot of cynicism and, a lot of people, feel discouraged, can feel discouraged. And I wanted to show, just in my personal conversations, I've noticed, it's easy for people to lapse into negativity and say that, how what's wrong with our society and all the things that are wrong and all the awful people out there and all the bigots. And, but the truth is things have gotten better, like so much better, monumentally better. And it's because so many people have been working for it for so long and we're continuing to do so. And that's what I want to focus on because that keeps people motivated to keep going.
Yeah.
You know?
And it gets better and it moves forward because people like you and your crew and me and everybody who listens, because we use our voice. And this is just the greatest example of an individual using your voice. So, so excited for everything coming up for you. You're going to keep us posted?
Absolutely. And thank you so much. You're such a sweetheart. All your comments have been so nice and I'm blushing and kind of tearing up a little bit. So thank you.
That's why we do this on the radio. All the best in the exciting upcoming month. And we love to hear more from you.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks, that about wraps things up for this week's episode, because we want to play for you some of We Have the Right by Samia, one of our amazing guests on this week's episode. Huge thanks to actress and all-around inspiration Tracy Dinwiddie, and of course to Chris Brown from the LA Gay and Lesbian Center, and a huge shout-out to the Gear and Tent crew of AIDS Lifecycle. You guys are amazing. Get out there, folks. Go do whatever it is that you do to raise up the voices of your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And of course, while you're doing it, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
We have the right to be together. We have the right to be together. Remember when sex was still a crime? Lovers at risk of doing time. We had no choice but to broke up in 69. Cops rushed in and crossed a line.